At first, the mudmen only gaped at him. Then they drew together and palavered in a mixture of grunts, clicks, and unsettling growls. Just when Tim was beginning to believe the conference would go on forever, several of the tribesmen turned and sprinted off. Another, the tallest, turned to Tim and held out both of his hands. They were hands, although there were too many fingers on them, and the palms were green with some mossy substance. The gesture they made was clear and emphatic. Stay put. Tim nodded, then sat down on the tussock, like Small Lady Muffin on her tuffin, he thought, and began munching the rest of his bread. He cocked an eye for the wakes of returning swimmers as he ate and kept the foreshot in one hand. Flies and small bugs settled on his skin long enough to sip his sweat before flying off again. Tim thought that if something didn't happen soon, he'd have to jump in the water just to get away from the irritating things, which were too quick to catch with a slap. Only who knew what else might be hiding in that murk or creeping along the bottom. As he swallowed the last bite of bread, a rhythmic thudding began to pulse across the morning misty swamp, startling more birds into flight. Some of these were surprisingly large, with pink plumage and long, thin legs that paddled the water as they fought their way into the air. They made high, ululating cries that sounded to Tim like the laughter of children who had lost their minds. Someone's beating on the hollow log I wished for not so long ago. The thought raised a tired grin. The pounding went on for 5 minutes or so, then ceased. The cullies on the bank were staring in the direction from which Tim had come, a much younger Tim that had been, foolishly laughing and following a bad fairy named Arminita. The mudmen shaded their eyes against the sun, now shining fiercely through the overhanging foliage and burning off the mist. It was shaping to be another unnaturally hot day. Tim heard splashing, and it was not long before a queer, misshapen boat emerged from the unraveling mists. It had been cobbled together of wood scraps gleaned from God's knew where and rode low in the water, trailing long tangles of moss and waterweed. There was a mast but no sail. At the top, acting as lookout, was a boar's head surrounded by a shifting skein of flies. Four of the swamp dwellers rowed with paddles of some orange wood Tim did not recognize. A fifth stood at the prow, wearing a black silk top hat decorated with a red ribbon that trailed down over one bare shoulder. He peered ahead, sometimes waving left, sometimes right. The oarsman followed his wigwagging with the efficiency of long practice, the boat swooping neatly between the tussocks that had led Tim into his present difficulty. When the boat approached the black stretch of still water where the dragon had been, the helmsman bent, then stood up with a grunt of effort. In his arms he held a dripping chunk of carcass that Tim assumed had not long ago been attached to the head decorating the mast. The helmsman cradled it, never minding the blood that smeared his shaggy chest and arms, peering down into the water. He uttered a sharp, hooting cry followed by several rapid clicks. The crew shipped their oars. The boat maintained a little headway toward the tussock where Tim waited, but helmsman paid no attention. He was still peering raptly into the water. With a quiet, more shocking than the noisiest splash, a giant claw rose up, the talons half clenched. Cy Helmsman laid the bloody chunk of boar into that demanding palm as gently as a mother lays her sleeping babe into its crib. The talons closed around the meat, squeezing out droplets of blood that pattered into the water. Then, as quietly as it had come, the claw disappeared, bearing its tribute. Now you know how to appease a dragon, Tim thought. It occurred to him that he was amassing a wonderful store of tales, ones that would hold not just old Splint, but the whole village of Tree in thrall. He wondered if he would ever live to tell them.